Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Week in IndyCar. Oh, this is not listener Q&A. We will be doing some listening. We will be doing some queuing and A-ing. But indeed, this is our old friend, Snoop Medley Med, a.k.a. the, all caps, Chris Medland, racers, Formula One reporter par excellence, who just got back from a long trip down under to the east, Australia, Japan, covering all things F1, but also, Chris, with your deep background in covering the European open wheel ladder, you have gotten to know the fine folks at Prema Racing for many years now. And as we at Racer have been developing this story of interest, I think January might have been our first story, Chris, on Prema acknowledging their interest in looking at IndyCar. Known that there was a program in the works, confirmed today by the team, I figured who better to tell us about this team, which, unless you are a real fan of IMSA and the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and the occasional appearances by Prema, be it an LMP2 or facilitating the brand new Lamborghini GTP program, it's probably a name that a lot of American IndyCar fans aren't familiar with. So that's where I wanted to start, brother. Tell me about Prema. What have they achieved? What are they known for, especially with this big ladder system that they have that has fired so many drivers into Formula One?
Yeah, I've got to say, without trying to toot their own horn for them too much, but Prema are one of the most outstanding junior teams in racing over here in Europe. Never really spoken about themselves getting to Formula One, and I know we've had that in the past with other big junior names like Carlin, but you can definitely put them on that level. Prema have won titles and dominated championships in pretty much every step of the ladder in single-seater racing here. Freca, Formula 3, Formula 2. It's basically the team you want to be part of, and it's really seemed to come to the fore with a big boost going back, I guess, like nearly 10 years now with Lance Stroll. They were a strong team racing Formula 3 at Macau, but when Lance Stroll was coming through the junior categories, I think his influence and the backing he had that came to Prema really helped. Prema then had a very tight partnership and affiliation with the Ferrari Driver Academy, which they still have, because if anyone is unaware, Prema Racing are based in Italy, so they are very akin to like a junior Ferrari in that sense. Funny enough, running in red as well. So it looks like a bit of a mini Ferrari out on track, but yeah, separate entities and hugely, hugely successful. So for any maybe F1 fans who follow their IndyCar but don't follow junior categories and saw Ollie Bearman make that amazing one-off appearance in Jeddah for Ferrari this season, he races for Prema in Formula 2. So it shows that they do a pretty good job of kind of training and preparing young drivers for the big time.
When you look at the other role of drivers who are in F1 who passed through Prema's hands, and I think at my last look, it was something like a third. Like, we're not talking about a team that, hey, look, they got one or two drivers over the years to F1. Seemingly, if you want to be in F1, that is the place that you need to ring first. And tell me, Chris, about team principal, whether it's Renee or Jelena, there seems to be a really strong layer of management and also culture. Not knowing the team exceedingly well, one thing I do know about them, just because it's been shared with me by many of their former drivers, Felix Rosenqvist being one of them, Callum Ilott certainly, the culture there seems to be one that filters down from the top and breeds a lot of success. But tell me about the players who make Prema Racing what it is.
Yeah, Rene Rossen is the main one. He's the team principal. And if I'm right in remembering, it was his father, Angelo, who basically set up the team. And he's taken over from his father in that sense as the main team principal. But because they compete in so many different series, you do have multiple team members that they've kind of put in charge of each category. So I actually think from an IndyCar point of view, they'll be putting someone in place. You might know better than me, MP. I've heard that P Pierce's name has been linked with it, who was at Rahal. And yeah, they'll find someone with expertise that they want to run it at the top for that sort of category. But the team itself is then overseen by René Rossin, who is a really good driving force. He's got a great ability to man-manage drivers and young drivers and not put too much pressure on them, but make sure that they are delivering, because he's ensuring that they're going to have the best equipment, or generally the best equipment in the junior series. As I say all this, you know, Formula 2 is the kind of flagship of Premride, still say. Aside from some of the WEC stuff they do, the fact that we're focusing on open wheel, I'd say it's Formula 2. And they've actually struggled a bit at the start of the season with a new car. And I can tell you that's a big shock to a lot of people. But they've also then, while they've been struggling at the same time, Behrmann put the car on pole in Jeddah before he had to withdraw to race in Formula 1. So it's all relative, but they haven't been dominating or winning races so far. So he'll be looking to turn that round pretty quickly. But René gets very hands-on then. If there is a kind of weakness in that sense, and he's going to be a guy that I think people see a lot of. Angelina Ertzu is also part of that, married to René, but kind of almost heads up the comms department, but also aspects of the racing team as well. Quite often she'll go and look after some of the even younger drivers in Formula 4 and Freca as well in Formula 3. So it's a real kind of family affair going on in that sense as well. And I think that is important, because when a lot of junior drivers are coming through, and I know that Prema have already said that they're kind of looking at having an experienced IndyCar name, but also hopefully a youngster that's come through the European ranks. A lot of them have to then move to Italy to base themselves around the team. And for quite a few drivers, that's a big change. It tends to be easier, I'm not saying easy by any stretch, for drivers going to teams that are based in the UK, perhaps, because the language barrier is less. A lot of European drivers learn English as their second language at a very young age, and it just helps them. Whereas a lot of other drivers having to go to Italy, Italian might not be a language they've learned yet. It's a new culture. So yeah, it's that kind of family feel to the team that they've managed to create really helps. And quite often you then see drivers that go through the ranks with Prema from Formula 4 to Formula Regional to Formula 3 and then to Formula 2. So yeah, it's quite a cool atmosphere they've got in that sense.
We'll come here to America and we'll get you all the Chick-fil-A and 7-Eleven big gulps you'd ever want and need. We're mighty accommodating here. All that kidding aside, one of the impressive things, Chris, that stood out from this developing story, they managed to engage with Chevrolet and have two engine leases. So they've announced they'll be running two cars full-time starting next year. They've been operating while in the U.S. out of a base attached to the Lamborghini Squadra effort in, I think, Sterling Heights, Michigan, but have said that they'll be preparing, or I don't know if they're going to build or move into, their words, a state-of-the-art facility in Indiana, so would assume somewhere close to Indianapolis. They're doing all the things that stand out as correct, but also impressive. The Chevrolet signing, Chris, that's honestly, that's one of the big indicators for me. Old story, so for those who are unfamiliar, apologize, but for those who followed IndyCar for a while now, most know that gaining access to the grid, being able to compete, there are no barriers from the series itself. If you want to buy cars and try and compete in IndyCar, you're welcome to do so. Getting an engine lease, that's been the problem. It's not because Chevrolet or their rivals at Honda are bad people. It's a fact of being heavily oversubscribed, or at least to the limit. And so Honda, for example, this year, Chris, in this 27 full-time car grid, Honda looks after 15 leases. Chevrolet looks after 12. It's 27 cars with the addition of Prema next year. And I'm not aware of any IndyCar teams looking to downsize next year. I'm expecting to have the same 27 plus two from Prema is going to get us up to 29 full-time cars. Before we spoke here, was just on the phone with our friend Bill Abel with the Abel Motorsports team. They've just bought a brand new Dallara, look to compete again at the Indy 500 using Chevrolet power, hope to be doing some, whether it's part or full-time racing next year. Going to be up to 30 cars potentially at minimum. Shouldn't say at minimum, but We're looking at 29 to 30 cars next year in the IndyCar grid, which is insane. But getting access to those very coveted engine leases, that's been a sticking point for many teams. And here we have a team that has done zero races in IndyCar, zero in the Indy NXT ladder series, right? Doesn't even have a IndyCar base yet, Chris. And yet Chevrolet, based on the reputation of the team and obviously meeting with Rene and colleagues, have co-signed and endorsed them and said, yes, we will be your engine provider for your opening campaign in 2025. Tell me about that, because even though folks might not know Prema in the U.S. by and large, this is a pretty big statement from General Motors saying, we believe in you.
Yeah, and I think, as you've just said, it's the reputation that precedes them, but where that will have been helped is by some of the drivers that are currently racing in IndyCar or have raced in IndyCar, because they've worked with Prema in the past over in Europe. So, I mean, the list of their champions across different categories is hugely impressive, and a number of current F1 drivers are on that list as well. But if I look at, like, say, former IndyCar drivers, I mean, Ryan Briscoe's on there, but you've then got... Felix Rosenqvist is someone who won the Formula 3 European Championship with Prema. There was someone else that came to mind, like Marcus Armstrong. He's raced with Prema. There's drivers there that are currently in IndyCar that can go over to, well, I suppose if Chevrolet came to them and said, well, what do you think? Are they a serious player? They're going to go, absolutely. You know, they were brilliant for my career. They do not do things by halves. When they commit properly. When they put their name to something, they want to be clearly seen as successful. And that is important. I think you mentioned the Lamborghini hypercar situation. I think Prema are not yet convinced that that's in a place that they're ready to be seen as, you know, kind of fully branding and fully taking control of. They want to be a part of it and are being a part of it. But, a Prema racing IndyCar team means, you know, there is going to be no stone left unturned in terms of trying to make it as competitive as possible. It's a well-funded team. You know, not going to be worrying about them not paying their bills on time. And it's also been the development and evolution of the team, I think, has been quite impressive as well. So we've seen certain junior teams maybe try and run before they can walk, and they start off with kind of small level entry, and then instantly are saying, well, we're going to be racing an IndyCar in a year or two, and they've leapt to the front. Prema's been around for over 40 years as a racing team, and has kind of slowly expanded and gone further over that period of time, and hasn't been afraid to expand, but has kind of done it carefully, I'd say. And it's always added certain new categories or new challenges when it thinks the time is right and it can do it properly, not just because it wants to do it, if that makes sense. So I think the actual knowledge that others, first-hand knowledge that drivers currently on the grid will have had, or previously on the IndyCar grid will have had, will certainly have helped Chevrolet come to that decision. And they know that they're getting a real elite-level racing team in terms of what Prema have achieved previously, both in single seaters and open wheel racing here, and they've done a pretty good job as well in the World Endurance Championship too.
Time to say a big thank you to our show partners on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, starting with FAF Technologies, build to print composites manufacturing company. They're specializing in medium to large scale automotive, motorsports, and military applications. Visit FAFTechnologies.com. It's PFAFF technologies.com to learn more about their services and how they can benefit your business. Next, it's the Justice Brothers, makers of premium additives, lubricants, and cleaners, and servicing the automotive and motorsports industries for more than 85 years, with victories in all the biggest North American motor races, including the Indianapolis 500, the 24 Hours of Daytona. The Justice Brothers products are truly race proven. Learn about their vast history and range of offerings at justicebrothers.com. If you're fond of awesome motor racing collectibles, including FAF Motorsports McLaren gear and goodies, pay a visit to torontomotorsports.com. And finally, we have a new online merchandise home for the podcast, thepruittstore.com. All the show stickers, models, racing memorabilia I'm trying to sell and put towards our fund to buy a house is now live and rocking. thepruittstore.com. Two more things, brother, here before we let you go to sleep, because I know your body's telling you to shut it down. Within not too much time after the confirmation this morning, had an IndyCar driver reach out and ask for their contact info. So that's the kind of thing you'd love, right? It shows that the racing ecosphere is functioning in a healthy manner. So I have no doubt there will be plenty of drivers wanting to connect with them. But before I ask about that, I wanted to get your thoughts, Chris, and maybe what you think the rest of the F1 paddock or F2 paddock might be thinking, knowing that with Formula One's approach in recent years of not being extra welcoming to opening the door to an 11th team or 12th team, 10 teams, 20 cars, stuck. We know the travails of Andretti Global and their efforts. The door and pathway to joining F1 has not been something that has been particularly welcoming. Here we are in IndyCar, where the door has never been shut, by and large. And we have Prema saying, okay, well, we have aced the proverbial test on the European open wheel ladders. We want to take that next step up. We don't have that ability currently with what would be the natural series for us to go into, being Formula One. Let's go across the pond and set up a whole new outfit in Middle America, and let's go IndyCar racing. What do you think that says? Is that, I don't want to say a message, but knowing that Formula One's not a place where new teams are currently able to join, what does this say to you about Prema, a big name, tipping in with IndyCar? Curious if you also think this might be the first of, who knows, one or two or three deciding, okay, if the door's closed here, I'm going to go where it's open.
I think it's multifaceted, because I think it does say a lot about Formula One, but not in a negative way. It's that the leap is so enormous. Like, the budget you need, the facilities you need, that it's just stratospheric making the jump from Formula 2, a spec series, as a junior team to Formula 1. I mean, Prema never seriously considered it, in the sense of, we did have that tender last year that was open, and Prema was not a name that made the final four, if they even submitted any note of interest. And I wasn't aware that they had, but it could have been that they might have done the initial one just to kind of find out more about what would it take to become a Formula 1 team now. But it's not a natural evolution, I think, for any junior team in Formula 2, sadly. It's just not the way that Formula 1 is structured as a business, let alone as a race series. And I think that's where it's a kind of a feather in the cap of IndyCar. And I don't want this to come across as negative, but in a sense, it shows that that's a smaller step from Formula 2 to IndyCar. It's a much more attainable step. There's a lot of similarities there in terms of the way that certain things are spec and certain things are not. But also just that kind of almost rawness of going racing and the way that it's been created. It's not in the same way a totally different world to try and consider becoming a part of. But also it shows it's so much better value for money for junior teams. It does become a step that they can think about making, even though it will be a lot more expensive than Formula 2. And as you say, logistically is a big, big undertaking to then set something up in North America. But by the same token, it's why the Andretti situation has been quite interesting, is they've got a Silverstone base because they need to have something in Europe. And even the amazing huge facility they're going to build in Fishers, it shows that you can't just do it like that. The logistics mean you've got to have a base kind of where most other things are focused in Europe. So I think what this says is, if you are realistically, if Prema do one day want to reach Formula One and become a Formula One team, going and doing IndyCar is a logical move on that front, because it's a fresh start. It's a whole new setup they're going to have to do. As you say, it's been very impressive what they've committed to, the deals they've managed to do with Chevrolet, what they're going to have as a base, where they're going to be based, the contacts they'll have made, the people they're going to hire. But that is kind of similar to what Andretti are trying to do moving towards F1. They do have to create something completely new. And it's a long, long time since it was as simple as you run cars in Formula 3, and then in Formula 2, well, that same shop might build a Formula 1 car and run it as well. They're so far apart now as levels and categories. I just don't think it's realistic for any junior team. You know, we never saw Carlin make it either to Formula One. The newest teams that have reached F1 have generally been kind of brand new entities that were created. We had the spell where a few tried to do it. What was Manna became Virgin, and that failed. Became Marussia and failed. Hispania HRT was kind of like a spin-off of a Spanish junior team, also didn't make it. So you kind of found that, yeah, that was a bridge too far back then. And I think it's the same now. So I think this just says for IndyCar, it's positioned perfectly. It is exactly where it needs to be. If it ends up with a grid of 30 cars and you end up with pre-qualifying or, you know, entrants having to qualify for every round, that's an incredible spot to be in. And that means that the series is offering value for money and high quality racing, but not just in terms of it's full of raw race driven fans, people that and teams that just want to be part of it, but also they're still businesses, so there's still got to be value in terms of sponsors and partners. And if you're getting more and more entrants, then that says you've got all of those things set correctly. So I just think it's a feather to the cap of IndyCar in that sense.
Close on this. This is the fun part of the game, Chris, because you and I have seen it taking place on social media already. Well, who does Prema go after? Who does Prema hire? Who does Prema try and pull up from their European open wheel ladder? I know that Callum Ilott's name has been mentioned quite a few times on the to hire front. Obviously, he has been an invaluable resource to Arrow McLaren, stepping in for the injured David Malukas. Obviously did very well the last couple years with the smaller, more minnow-level Hunkos-Hollinger Racing IndyCar team, but he would be one of few, precious few, Chris, IndyCar veterans who are young and still developing, but also potentially a free agent next year, assuming an Arrow McLaren or similar doesn't hire him beforehand to be full-time. But what comes to mind, at least on the European open wheel side? Anyone within Prema's current ladder or those who are recent graduates, maybe banging their head on the Formula One race drive wall, who are in some sort of test or reserve role? Any names come to mind while we're doing the fantasy speculation of who they might look at for IndyCar next year?
Yeah, I'm sure you've been there yourself, MP, but there's one that really jumps to mind straight away, and it's Robert Schwartzman. He's obviously tested an IndyCar, hasn't made it into a full-time ride there, but is still technically one of the Ferrari reserve drivers, but closely aligned with Prema, has done some racing with them in WEC before, I believe. He's also been part of the Ferrari hypercar setup. So Robert is someone who hasn't been able to break through into Formula One, sadly, but is still very, very close to Prema, and I think would fit the bill for them heading over to IndyCar as someone who's come through their ranks. He last raced for the team in single-seaters in 2021 in the Formula 2 Championship, where that was the last time the team won the team's championship in Formula 2. His teammate then was pretty handy. It was Oscar Piastri, and the two of them were kind of fighting for the championship. So, he helped them win back-to-back teams championships, actually, because he was paired with Mick Schumacher the year before, and again, they won the team's championship then. So he's certainly won. More recently, Fred Vesti nearly won the Formula 2 Championship last year and then didn't have really anywhere to go, but he's more aligned with Mercedes now, so whether that would open itself up to an IndyCar ride, I'm not too sure, but potentially could do. What's interesting is this year's pair, I'd love to see either of them involved, but I don't quite see it unless it was a case of, well, there's nowhere else for them to go and we want to have them racing at the highest level possible. But their current lineup is Ollie Bearman, as I mentioned earlier, who is he's still so young. I believe he's still 18. I don't think he's turned 19 yet. And he is definitely a star of the future. Ferrari reserve driver, had that brilliant one-off appearance in Jeddah. But then his teammate is Andrea Kimi Antonelli, who is the guy that Mercedes are so excited about.
Yeah.
One of the Mercedes young drivers. They fast-tracked him to Formula 2. He's in the frame for Mercedes F1 drive next year, but you never know if that might come too soon. Personally, sat here now, I think it's already coming too soon, just to be discussed. He's got a best finish of fourth this season. He finished fourth in the feature race in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago. But he crashed out of the sprint race, you know, kind of making a racing error. And he's still raw. He's so young as well. Someone that he's just 17. He needs more development time. Now, if they feel that he's got the potential to reach F1, they might want to keep him in and around Formula One. And they might try and get him a seat at a junior team. But if not, I mean, who knows? Maybe Prema could try and convince Mercedes that his development would be better served having a year racing in IndyCar. I doubt it, but I'd love to see it. And just the fact that those names could be linked is quite exciting. But yeah, Schwartzman's the one that really jumps out at me that I think that they would be keen to see in there. Because I think, as far as I'm aware, A, he's enjoyed his IndyCar chances when he's had some tests. But B, I think he's generally impressed when he's done that as well.
I can tell you that when he tested for Chip Ganassi Racing off-season of 2022, I believe. I forget whether it was October or November. The team immediately was like, okay, we want Robert. We want, please, please, Robert. And didn't quite pan out. Admittedly, the general feedback I got was it seemed like, you know, wanted to do it, wanted to at least see what it was like. Was super quick. That I don't think was ever going to be a question, but was not a feeling given that his heart was in moving to IndyCar and potentially ending whatever European dreams that he had of reaching F1. I don't know if with a little bit of time and a lack of things continuing to develop for him in that capacity, Chris, has maybe changed his approach, but I'm with you. Schwartzman seems like somebody who, provided Prem is able to put a competitive car on track in their first season, which is by no means a guarantee. Carlin, for example, struggled mightily on their IndyCar debut. But if they were to bring him over, I think that would be someone that folks would... How's this? In a short amount of time, I think you would have the Penske's, Ganassi's, and similar inquiring about his services. So that would be fascinating. Nonetheless, exciting times ahead. European big powerful team coming over. This story isn't one we get to write all that often. Carlin being the last. Before that, some great entries. RSM Marco, which folks might not remember, was a small little blip on the Indy Racing League radar in 1998. Was fortunate to be there and see it when Helmut Marko took his F3000 team over here and ran a couple of IRL races with the late and great Dave Steele. I got my start in kind of bigger time pro racing here as a young mechanic and entry-level engineer with Genoa Racing, F3000 champions that came over Italian as well. So there's some other entries, but by and large, this is not a story we get to write that often. And the thing that I love most here, Chris, is this is a team that is no joke. This is the best being entered into the IndyCar fray. So hopefully this also means get to see more of you, because you know what you need to do? More international travel, my friend.
I do miss it, actually, not getting out to 500 qualifying, because it seems to clash with the race now. They've made Monaco back-to-back each time with something. And yeah, there just doesn't seem to be many windows to get out there. I didn't even make it to Daytona for the Rolex this year. So hopefully, yeah, either later this year or next year, can get to a few more IndyCar events and US events, because I do miss it. But you're right, just the F1 calendar is brutal at the moment. So my body clock is no idea what time it is. Apologies to everyone listening for all the rambling that I've done on this pod. But that is the impact of jet lag.
Brother, we appreciate you. Hope I do get to see you in person here soon. And get some sleep, my friend, because you're heading out the door here soon again for more F1. Thanks to y'all for listening. Thanks again to our partners, Pfaff Technologies, the Justice Brothers, and TorontoMotorsports.com. We'll speak to you here very soon.